I'm Laura.
And I'm Georgiana.
And this is De Canterbury Tales. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi, happy January.
Happy January. And happy belated birthday.
Thank you. And happy almost birthday to you.
Oh, thank you.
It's in my Pash planner. And I even put in at noon on your birthday, I scheduled time to call Georgiana.
Hey, I appreciate that.
It's highlighted and it says call Georgiana, because never again will I ever have to hear from you be like, hi, so you forgot my birthday and you didn't call me. And I was like, So just so you know, I took it to heart. And have still not used your one opportunity to call me an asshole to my face yet. So you still got it.
The fact that it's been a year and I'm still holding on to that, it's
going to be a really good one.
It's like in How I Met Your Mother, like holding the slaps, and he gets like 5 good slaps or something. And he never knows when they're going to happen. That's what this is.
Yeah. So I'm just going to prepare myself for one really, really good telling off at least once. But anyway, welcome to De Canterbury Tales. This is a boozy book club episode where we cover a book and interview the author. We pair a wine intentionally and have some fun discussion. So welcome. And this is our first book of 2023. Welcome to season 3.
Oh, this season 3. We're just about veterans.
We are practically professionals. I can't. We both just start laughing.
So professional.
Professional. But yes, man, happy season 3, Georgiana. We did it.
Happy season 3, Laura. I'm very proud of us. I'm very happy to be here.
So before we dive in, January, that's this month. Before we dive into our January book club, we have news and then we banter.
We will be, sorry, I had to hold for the horns. We will be at the Natchez Cinema and Literary Festival on February 23rd and 24th in Natchez, Mississippi. That's a short little stride from Jackson or New Orleans. So we would love for you to come hang out with us and discuss books. And I was looking at the roster and it's a really cool kind of a lineup of Lady Power books,
yes,
and Southern books, which I'm really into.
Yes, I think this year's theme plays very hard into women in literature, and a lot of the books, and we're going to one of the events, there's several books being highlighted that were written by pageant queens about their time in the pageant circuit and what that meant to them and just kind of being in the public eye. So I'm really, really excited to be there and be in that sphere as women in the literary scene, and also kind of as podcasters, we are, you know, out and about all the time. So it's very, very cool to be involved and invited. So super pumped. Thank you to the Natchez Literary and Cinema Festival celebration for having us. And in the vein of that, we have merch, y'all. At long last, we have merch. So by the time this episode airs, you can go to decanterburytales.com for info, check it out. We might have a pod shop available. That's what I'm going to try to do, is have a pod shop up, or you can get details on how to snag your merch, or you can get it from us live in person at our booth at the festival, at the Natchez Literary Festival. We've got bookmarks, we've got buttons, we've got stickers. They're all original designs, and every dollar spent obviously goes to directly support the podcast. Again, we are completely self-produced, so we also self-produce all of our merch. So we did all of the designs. You might recognize some of the quotes from things that we have posted on Instagram or talked about on the show. So they're all kind of you know, their show merch. So we hope you like it. We hope you enjoy them and check it out. DeCanterburyTales.com at the pod shop.
So I know I'm buying the hologram one that you made.
But oh my God, Becky, look at her book. It is like so big.
Yep. Yes. That's what I want.
We have two hologram stickers, some kind of matte stickers, we have three bookmarks and three buttons. So,
and then we'll have our traditional Canterbury ticker.
Yes.
Woo to the who. Woo to the who.
Woo to the who.
Woo to the who.
And anyway, now we banter. How are you? What's up?
I am good. January has been a nice, quiet month for me, which I am very grateful for. I really do not have anything to share, minus I was driving down the road yesterday, and I was talking on the phone with Laura, and there was this dude just walking down the street, flipping all the cars off as he walked by, as we drove by and he walked by. And, you know, I was like, I'm not even offended. That's kind of a mood. And then the Instagram, like, meme gods sent me the video of the map to make you zoom in, and it says send to your BFF, and it's somebody flicking somebody off out of a car. And obviously I had to send that to Laura since we had just been talking about it. And so I don't know what the world is trying to tell me with some middle fingers, but I'm gonna roll with it because I feel happy. But
it was really, honestly, you were like, wow, Laura, I just need to stop every conversation bit that we're having right now to tell you about this. And I was like, that's a whole mood. That is a whole mood.
It was a vibe. And
I can relate.
You gotta accept that. So no harm, no harm. I take that. So that's really what I have to offer in this month. Not much, just a bird.
Just a bird. If I'm a bird, you're a bird.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, I had a slightly more busy month, and I guess by the time we release our next episode, it'll already be announced. So I'm going to say it here anyway. So this is hot scoop because I'm not allowed to release it on social media yet, but I was nominated by several people and selected. I am a finalist for the Best Dressed Jackson for that competition. So if you see me posting the link to donate to my fundraiser, it's part of the American Cancer Society, and it is a fundraiser for them here in Jackson. And that is a organization and a cause that is near and dear to my heart. So super pumped. So if you see lots of photos of me dressed up asking for you for money, that's why. But I have a finalist.
You well-dressed lady.
Thank you. Thank you very much. What else did I do this month? I went and saw the Mississippi Symphony Orchestra play a bunch of Mozart by candlelight, which was delightful. Very much so enjoyed that. I had my 7th wedding anniversary. We went to the gym and ate hibachi. It was very chill. And
what'd you eat?
Hibachi.
Mm, nice.
It was tasty. It was just nice. Low effort. And really that was it. That was kind of it. We have a really long episode and a really long interview with Carolyn Prusa. So I don't want to like banter for too long. What have you been reading, watching, and listening to?
So I am on book 6 for the month. I have read The Family Upstairs. None of this would have happened if Prince were alive. Bossy Pants, Court of the Vampire Queen, and All of the Dangerous Things. And I'm currently reading Mouth to Mouth by Antoine Wilson. That is the book that I bought at the Mississippi Book Festival with you.
Oh.
Yeah. So reading that guy. And I am watching Man in the High Castle on Amazon and How I Met Your Father on Hulu. And I'm pretty much exclusively listening to Taylor Swift. I've taken it back a little bit. Not only am I staying on midnights, I'm really feeling some Shake It Off right now. So
I dig it. I dig it. Yeah. I, for the first time ever, I am on my 7th book of the month. Suck it, Georgiana.
So proud of you.
Thank you. I am on the 3rd book of, currently reading the 3rd book of A Court of Thorns and Roses. So that means, yes, I started the series at the beginning of this month, and I have read, I'm now almost more than halfway through the 3rd one. So yes, I am obsessed. And I actually intentionally did not start reading this series until I really, really wanted to, because I knew that I was going to be obsessed with it, and I was right. So yes, so I'm on book 3. I listened to Beyond the Wand by Tom Felton on Audible. Highly recommend downloading it and just doing it on Audible. He narrates it, and it's just perfect. I got through it in like 4 days, just listening to it all the time. I read All the Dangerous Things by Stacey Willingham. None of this would have happened if Prince were alive at the beginning of the month, or finish it, beginning of the month. And I'm currently listening to I'm Not a Philosopher, But I Got Thoughts by Christian Chenoweth. Really, really interesting. She's like really, really interesting as a person and her beliefs and her spirituality. Very interesting. And I'm also listening to Taylor Swift Midnights. I watched Megan in theaters, the thriller movie. Very fun. Very interesting. I'm not a scary movie person, but it was a thriller. Very fun. And Miss Marvel on Disney Plus, because I'm behind on my Marvel, so I'm trying to catch up. So we're watching through the Miss Marvel series, and that's what I'm reading, watching, listening to.
Well, I'm, my next book after I finish Mouth to Mouth is the 2nd A Court of Thorns and Roses, so A Court of Mist and Fury. So that's where I'm going next, so I'm excited.
It's about to get real good.
Oh, I know it is. I'm kind of taking my time with it, I think, because it's like, you know, when you find a really good show on Netflix and you just want to binge watch it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's where I could be. And that's what you're doing. You're binging the series. I'm trying to like spread it out.
But yes, I am binge reading. And I know that I'm going to be really sad when it's over. Shall we dive in the meat and potatoes?
Let's meat and potato.
Yes. So our January book was None of This Would Have Happened If Prince Were Alive by Carolyn Prusa. And we did get the opportunity to chat with her. So later this episode, you will get to listen to our really long, but really good interview with her where we talk about her book. Just a really fun lady.
She is a fun lady. We're now friends, and she's invited us to hang out with her. In person.
That's like, I think our first in-person hangout invite. I'm pumped for it.
Yeah, me too.
We drank
wine at 1:30 on a Sunday. It was lovely.
I know, we day drank.
Oops.
I'm okay with it. Well, shall we delve into the wine? Let's swap it up.
Yeah, I'm the wine lady this month, and there is a story for the wines that I picked. I'm going to take you on a little journey. So Ramona, she's a mom. She's got a job. She's got all of the balls juggling in the air. And she knows what she needs. She doesn't waste her time. She doesn't waste her money. So we went economical this month. You are very welcome. We went with the Trader Joe's varieties. And the first is Charles Shaw. I went with a Cabernet, but you can select whatever your favorite Charles Shaw vintage is. Mine retailed for $4.49.
We dig it.
This is my Ramona in the beginning of the book. You know, she's got too much going on. She's trying to take care of everything. She doesn't ask for help. She does not have time to go to the store and test out wine and get a bad one. No, no, no. She needs to know what she's getting is not breaking the bank. And she also needs to just know that it's going to be solid, not blow your mind, but drinkable wine. Also, you can get a case for $55. So I thought it would be interesting to learn a little bit about the Charles Shaw name, because there's a lot of story there. And one of the stories that I heard they say is not true. This is an article from Reader's Digest, but essentially the Charles Shaw label is known as Tubuck Chuck, because when it hit the shelves in 2002, it was priced at $1.99. Prices have increased slightly. And Trader Joe's sold more than 800 million bottles of the label in 12 years.
That's so much.
And it is a 12.5% ABV. So they maintain low prices because the Charles Shaw moved to Napa in 1974. He was making wine, great, charging $13.50 a bottle. He put out 15,000 cases of wine annually, won awards. But by the 90s, his business started suffering, and a supplier used the wrong type of wax for his wooden barrels. And so they tainted 1,400 bottle wine. And so he signed off on a deal to double the production that had flopped. And so he lost millions. His wife divorced him. The rumor is that they cut prices despite his ex-wife. This is apparently false. I like that narrative, though.
It's a fun narrative. It had to come from somewhere.
Yep, exactly. And so he ended up filing for bankruptcy and selling it to Fred Franzia for $27,000.
And only 27 grand?
Only 27 grand. And so Franzia, thanks to a surplus of grapes and inexpensive production costs after 9/11, there was an oversupply. And so that's why he sold the surplus at low prices, and then that gamble paid off. So that,
and thus Tubuck Chuck was born.
And thus Tubuck Chuck, which is now 449 Buck Chuck.
Doesn't roll off the tongue.
Quite does not. And there's a lot of kind of controversy around the creation of the wine. The vineyards are in the San Joaquin Valley, where they have higher temperatures and the grapes are overripened, and the cost of land is lower. They use fermented oak chips instead of oak barrels. The bottles are lightweight and corked with a cheap natural cork. They produce 90 million gallons a year of the wine.
So Kevin.
Yeah. Swim in it. Swim.
We just swim in it. We can fill so many. I gotta know. I want to know how many Olympic sized pools we could
do with 90 gallons or 90 million, excuse me. But so this is a direct quote: machines harvest the grapes to lower labor costs. But people say it's unsanitary because of bad grapes and animal matter. But Franzia says everything ferments out. So stop worrying about it.
Stop. Just stop.
Yeah.
You said 90 million was the gallons?
90 million is the gallons.
Okay. Give me a second. Mm-hmm. You can keep going.
So we then move to our second varietal, because Ramona kind of goes on an evolution. Hold on. She's got it.
I've got it. So just to put that in perspective, you could fill 136 Olympic sized swimming pools and still have enough to fill one third of your 137th. So there's still enough wine for everyone to also drink it while you're swimming in your 136 Olympic sized swimming pools.
There you go. That's a ton of wine, y'all. That's a ton of wine.
Anyway, needed to know.
No, it's
the important. More you know.
The more you know, the more you share. So our second wine is kind of the evolution of Ramona. She finds out that her husband is cheating on her. she finally tells her boss, I need help. She is in the middle of a hurricane. Just, she's having a little like come to Jesus moment of, what am I doing with my life? I no longer paint anymore. I no longer do nothing for myself, which we talk with Carolyn Prusa about being a mother and things like that and how that just kind of happens. So I thought that Ramona, post these changes in her life, whether she gets a divorce or not, she's going to start having a little more fun in her life. And she's going to go to Trader Joe's. She's still got to watch the bank. She's going to buy a $6.99 bottle.
And slight upgrade.
Slight upgrade. But she's going to peruse the store. She's going to walk around and pick the labels that kind of mean something to her, something she finds interesting, have fun, because you know what? Life's short, play. Let's move on from Charles Shaw. So I picked Well Red, and it is a red blend. And it has no detectable sulfites. It's USDA organic certified.
Okay.
And it is 12.5% ABV. And they sell it at Trader Joe's and other fine retailers, as they say. The reason I picked up this bottle, besides the name Well Red, it has a room with a window, a door, a fireplace, a rug with a moon and a star, a sun on it. And there's books above the fireplace. There's a table with the wine on it. And for some reason, it kind of reminded me of Goodnight Moon.
Oh,
just yeah, the way okay, it's set up. And so that also kind of brought me back to like her children and mom time and being there for them. So it all just kind of felt kind of Ramona in that sense. But the tasting notes also, guys, it's a screw top, so it travels well.
Whoop, whoop.
So tasting notes, it is perfectly balanced, filled with black cherry and blackberry flavors, leading to a hint of toasted vanilla. And they recommend, pairing it with grilled soy glazed wild salmon over basmati rice or a spinach and leek frittata. And they recommend those because it is a lighter style wine. So it it pairs with a variety of dishes there. So that's okay. Why we go from frittata to salmon. And so, yeah, the wines are kind of your budget friendly, but also, you know, reminding you that sometimes it's fun to pop out of the box and pick something just because you like it, not because it's economical and you know it's decent. You can live on the edge and buy the $7 bottle that you're not sure. It may suck. But this is a very decent bottle of wine. Is it the best wine that we have covered? No. But for $7?
Heck yeah. And it's at Trader Joe's, which is mentioned by name in the book.
Exactly. And we love a TJ's. So
TJ's moment.
Yeah. So have fun with your wine. And if you still are on the Charles Shaw train, same girl.
Well, huzzah. I am definitely looking forward to trying this well-read wine. I do not have a Trader Joe's nearby, so it'll be until I can get to New Orleans to purchase this wine. Are we ready for time to ruin the plot?
Yep, let's ruin it, even though I ruined it a little bit in my spiel.
That's totally fine. And then I have a couple of questions, but we are going to ruin the plot. So if you're going to read the book and haven't read it yet, and you don't want us to ruin it for you, go ahead and hit pause and go finish it and then come back. But I have a synopsis from the publisher, Simon & Schuster, and then I also have a couple of reviews, like one-liner reviews, and then a bigger-ish review to kind of like delve into some of this.
Cool.
So this one is from SimonAndSchuster.com. This smart and witty debut novel follows Ramona through the 48 hours after her life has been upended by the discovery of her husband's affair and an approaching Category 4 hurricane, Hurricane Matthew. Ramona's got a bratty boss, a toddler teetering through toilet training, a critical mom who doesn't mind sharing what's on her mind, and a cheating husband. That's how a Category 4 hurricane bearing down on her life in Savannah becomes just another item on her to-do list. In the next 48 hours, she'll add a neighborhood child and the class guinea pig named Clarence Thomas to her entourage as she struggles to evacuate town. Ignoring the persistent glow of her minivan's check engine light, Ramona navigates police checkpoints, bathroom emergencies, demands from her boss, and torrential downpours while fielding calls and apology texts from her cheating husband and longing for the days when her life was like a Prince song, full of sexy creativity and joy. Thoroughly entertaining and completely relatable, none of this would have happened if Prince were alive, is the hilarious, heartwarming story of a woman up to her elbows in calamities and about to drive off the brink of the rest of her life. And that is their kind of brief plot synopsis. A few points that they don't include that I think are relevant are the calls from the other woman that she routinely starts getting throughout all of this while she's trying to evacuate, the mom getting rushed to the hospital, the husband showing back up at the end and their attempts to at least somehow decide to move forward or what they're going to do. It's also, there's pieces and parts that you get flashbacks of her life in college. And then you also get flashbacks of the beginning of their marriage. And it does not, in my opinion, give a lot of, when you're getting backflashes into their marriage, you're not getting a lot of like context clues of him cheating.
No.
You're really not. And I think that's, we'll get to it, but there's several points in this book where I'm just like, so he's just a jerk. Like, I don't understand. But a couple of the reviews, a story that explores how individual identity and happiness can be unintentionally misplaced in marriage and motherhood. Both insightful and messy in the most relatable way. This book will have you cackling, nodding in agreement, and rooting hard for Ramona as she battles various storms, figurative and literal. A keenly observant, fast-paced comedy that illustrates just how tough it can be, as Prince would say, to get through this thing called life. Finding humor in heartbreak, Prusa presents a strong-willed heroine who copes with one indignity after another. From the acutely embarrassing to the brutally life-changing, all while dodging in and out of the path of an oncoming hurricane. And I thought that was really interesting for all of these. There is one that kind of flips on the other side. So if you have read this book, there's a lot of humor despite the very heavy subject matter. And part of that is Ramona's natural wit. And it helps with these eccentric characters in Ramona's life that are relatable and act like people you may know in real life. Which I think is really, really great. That's what had me kind of laughing are some of the quips that you get throughout these little snapshots. One of the reviews that I've read talks about a lot of the supporting characters, because it is truly, the book only covers 48 hours intentionally. So there's only so much that you can cover in 48 hours. So it intentionally leans on some generalized kind of stereotypes so that you as a reader can kind of glean what this character is all about while not needing like six chapters to figure it out, if that makes sense. And overall, I thought this was a really fun read. I was laughing. It had so many moments that were so relatable as a parent, as a friend, as a partner and a spouse. There were so many points where I was just like giggling because it was so ridiculously relatable, where you're just, or even in her like professional life. And I thought that was a perfect way to kick off season three.
I really liked it. I think that the book had some weight to it. You know, it wasn't just a tra-la-la book, but it wasn't so heavy that you were brought down by it. And, you know, I think that it's kind of an interesting kind of vignette into 48 hours in a life and how there usually is a bunch of heavy shit going on in people's lives, but that's always just humming in the background. It's never like up in your face. It's the funny things that kind of propel you along, like the jokes that you make with your friend, like, LOL, this is going yep. on and I'm fine. The house is burning down, but I'm fine. And, you know, so to the people that thought that some of the relationships were surface level, because I also saw that in reviews, you're getting a snapshot in life. Like every single time I talk to Lara, I'm not going to break down our life and our friendship. It's just like it's a check-in.
Well, I feel like for that, you're getting, you know, truly the parts that people play in someone's life over a 48-hour period of time. And so some of the people that you're getting, some of the characters that you're getting, yeah, you don't get like a whole fleshed out thing. Half the time she spends avoiding her husband. So you don't really even get him for a bulk of it. So I agree with you. I think that I don't mind that some of these characters are not super fleshed out. I think that's fine.
Mm-hmm. I think all right, it would I think it would make way less sense if, you know, we knew the whole backstory of how they met and all of their drama that they've been through and things like that. I think it would have just taken away from kind of the lightness of it in the
I agree. And she gives us just enough. Mm-hmm. Just enough. And it is written from Ramona's perspective. So like, I don't need all of his business. Which leads me to, I have three questions. We do have like such an extensive interview with Carolyn, so I want to get to that. So the first one, the husband, do you root for him?
No.
Or do you think he's a piece of stuff?
Yeah, no, I don't like him. And maybe that's because there wasn't a fleshed out relationship, but so I don't understand and I don't see the nuances of their relationship and how they got there, and that maybe he's a good man on the inside. But no, on surface level in this book, I do not root for him. I root for Ramona's happiness and the happiness of her children. And so whatever comes of that, I hope that they can work it out well enough to be enough of a family for their children. That's all I really want for them. The affair seemed pointless and out of boredom and out of his own insecurities. And yeah, no, I just no sympathy for him in any way, shape or form.
I agree with you. And cause I've read books and I've seen, you know, movies and shows, and I've seen this played out where you see the other person's perspective and the partner like has an idea that it's coming. Or that, like, they're not okay. Whereas, like, Ramona seems to have no clue that they're this far gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing, is that she is, like, when it happens, like, it truly does break her heart. She's like, I love him. Like, that's my person. I'm his person. How dare he? And I think that that's just, like, the true sign in this, where I don't see like the good guy husband, like he just messed up, give him another, like I don't root for him at all.
I want them to separate for a little while and for him to have the kids on the weekend so Ramona can go to Trader Joe's and buy a couple different bottles of wine just because she likes the label. And
you are like committed to this narrative.
I am, like, I see that for her. I want that for her. I want her to have a moment for herself to, to be and to get back to who she wants to be.
I'm just going to briefly apologize if there's a ton of rustling in the background. Chicken Nugget will not be still, but if I don't let him in, then he'll just meow at the door. So if there's a ton of background noise, I apologize in advance to you, dear listeners. But this leads to my other question of my, like, second least favorite person in this book is the other woman.
Mm.
The phone calls.
So unnecessary.
Just rub salt in the wound. But my question was, do you feel like these phone calls are cruel? Does it make you feel bad for the other woman with how, like, she literally apparently has no friends and doesn't know who to talk to? Does it give you some perspective into her affair with Desmond? Or, like, do you just think it is pointless and cruel and awful?
Well, I think she's trying to clear her conscience. I think, okay, so Ramona's a mother. Ramona probably is experiencing some of the things that this woman has experienced in her marriage. At the end of the day, they're women of about the same age with children. They probably have more in common than, they probably have a good bit in common. And so I think this lady is trying to find solace and clear her conscience in trying to get Ramona to sympathize. Like, you can understand being in this situation, things like that. And so she's trying to, like, level out, I think, to try to make herself feel better about the situation, to see if maybe Ramona would have done the same if she had been in that situation.
I literally, the second when I was reading and it was like the other woman on the phone, I was like, no. And then she called again. I was like, stop calling.
Well, that's why I don't think it was, like, cruel and malicious. I think if she was cruel and malicious, she would have, like, called once and just, like, laid it all out there. I think this lady was just, like, freaking out, trying to clear her own conscience. And that's why she called so many times. I think if you were heartless, you would have just called once, said nanny, nanny, boo, boo. And
you boo, boo.
And then, like, moved on. That makes sense?
Yes. Yes. I have a subplot, and then I'd love to ask you about how you feel about the ending. But you get this very complicated subplot of the neighbor boy,
mm-hmm,
and his mom just, like, abandoning him, and then somehow Ramona just takes him on too. And that, what purpose do you feel like that particular subplot serves in the narrative? Like, what does it do besides add more stress to Ramona?
Well, and I think that's the thing. She's already nose deep in stress. But at the end of the day, she's a good person. She's got that motherly instinct and can see that somebody's in need. And she can't, even though there's chaos around her, her kindness still kind of, or not even kindness, but goodness still shines through. And, you know, back to the point of, like, yeah, this hurricane is happening. And Ramona has found out that her husband's cheated and that she's not getting the help and support she needs at her job. She didn't ask for it. All of this is going on around her. She's trying to raise two kids. The funds aren't all there, things like that. So her life is happening. And then there's neighbor boy Bailey, right?
Yes.
And he's abandoned by his mom. He's not asking his father for help. So they're both in a similar situation there that they're too stubborn to ask for the help that they need from the people around them. But at the end of the day, this hurricane is happening and propelling towards them. And that doesn't mean that life stops happening. And I think she can kind of, I think that they parallel in that way, and that their lives are not going great. And yeah, this big event is kind of bringing them together. And I think it makes Ramona feel good to help someone, even though things aren't great.
Yeah. And actually, this does also play into my picture of the husband, is that when she is like going through the mental decision to like pick him up and take him with her, she says that like Desmond would have been like, just leave him, he's fine, his mom will come back and get him. And so I was like, yeah, that, I think that colored him more too, is that like he mm-hmm. would have been like anti this decision, a little bit less giving in spirit, if you will.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
Which brings me to my last question, because we have a super long interview to get to with Carolyn. The ending. It's kind of a cliffhanger. Do you like it? And then what do you think is going to happen with Carolyn? I mean, with Carolyn, LOL, with Ramona.
Well, I think it all kind of makes sense. The ending. It's like the calm after the storm.
Yeah.
And they're outside grilling, eating whatever they have that hasn't gone bad, drinking, whatever. It's that moment of peace after everything has been flipped upside down. And you do get a moment to figure out what comes next before life starts happening again. Because if anybody has been in a hurricane, you know that you're just like, listen to the rain around you and the wind whipping and things flying and the power flickering, and it's unsettling. And then once the storm is over and, you know, it's still cloudy and it's kind of humid and misty, and you go outside,
so humid,
it's sticky out there, but there is this moment that you're like, okay, like I don't have to go back to work or school in like a day or two. We've got to like get our lives back together. And so I think this is kind of like a reflection on that moment of just like, okay, what do I do now? I've survived.
Yeah.
And I hope that Ramona, I'm glad that Ramona asked for help at her job, because I think she likes her job. I think she's good at her job. I think that it's just easy to say, I've got this. I'm doing it all. I'm a superhero. I don't need help. But saying, okay, wait, no, I need help. It's okay. And I think that she's going to find way more fulfillment out of her job because of that. I personally do not think she will make the decision to stay with her husband. I think that they need a little time. Because I think Ramona needs a little bit of time to focus on herself and focus on her children and focus on her job and not have to worry about fixing that aspect of her life.
Yeah. I think Desmond is a good father in the way that he is like a playmate to the children. Like he plays with the kids and like clearly wants to take care of them. Like he's not like a deadbeat dad and like isn't around, but he is not a partner in it. And I know at some point he says like, you never ask for help, but there are times throughout the book where it just seems like he's just like not present or doesn't realize the help that she's asking for. If that makes sense.
And if you have created two children together, I think that there's kind of like an unwritten rule that you kind of got to help out with not just the fun stuff, but with the day-to-day, the hard stuff. I think that that's just kind of the contract of parenthood.
Yeah.
I don't have children. You can tell me if that's something different, but I don't know.
No, that's about it.
I'm right. Yeah.
So I think for my idea of the ending is I do think she's going to end up dumping him. I do think she will end up leaving him, given, and what you can disagree with that or not. You can at me, go for it. But, I just think when she's like taking a hard look at the truth of what happened and how betrayed she felt, because it wasn't like either, and they both were not doing a great job of communicating. Mm-mm. And you can't fix that overnight. So you can't just magically become an expert communicator. So I think they will end up separating and both working, either desperately need to work on their communication skills, because without it, like, their marriage is not going to survive.
And boom. That's the tea.
And that's the tea. Sip it. Oh man. Okay. Well, we have quite an epic interview with the author. We asked her a bazillion questions and banter significantly. So without further ado, enjoy our interview with the author of the None of This Would Have Happened If Prince Were Alive,
Carolyn Prusa.
Hello, welcome to Canterbury Tales.
Everybody, hi. Wonderful to Canterbury Tales, that's a mouthful, audience.
And we are so lucky to have Carolyn Prusa with us, the author of None of This Would Have Happened If Prince Were Alive. And we're so excited that she's come on for our January episode to talk.
Ooh, see, the title was so long, I had full time to take a sip there.
There you go.
I did hit a point where we start like abbreviating so that we can get through it. But I loved, so the first thing that jumped out to me is the cover of your book, and the title obviously leaps off the page at you. And I took a picture of it and put it on my like personal Instagram story. I was like, someone please buy this for me for my birthday. I really want to read this book. And lo and behold, my best friend, she like produced it on our like talk about, you know, birthdays and to celebrate. And she goes, well, I saw you posted it, so I got it for you. And so that's kind of how, and I devoured your book in like a matter of a couple of days, but I think I was only four chapters in and immediately texted Georgiana and was like, hi, I am gonna send the author an Instagram DM and hope she answers, because I really think we should do this book to start off our third season. This is season 3 for Canterbury Tales. And I was like, I just think this is such a fun story with a lot of layers. So it's kind of why we picked your book.
And season 3, congrats, y'all.
Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
We've done a lot of reading.
And a lot of drinking. A lot of reading, a lot of drinking. So to dive in, our first question, which is why Prince? Why not, you know, Michael Jackson or another artist? And the piggyback on that, what makes someone a true Prince fan?
There's the cat. Oh. Well, there were a whole string of celebrity deaths that year, many of which were heartbreaking to me. I would say coming in close second and third after Prince would be David Bowie and George Michael.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And I think that if you love music, those deaths, even though we don't know the person, those deaths affect us, because it's like we have this emotional connection with that person because of the music. The other day I heard I Will Always Love You in the car with my son. him. I was like, well, you know, like Dolly Parton wrote it, you know, and that's a whole car lecture. And Whitney Houston sang it for this movie called Isn't That Great? But the song was fantastic. And I was like, you know, and Whitney Houston was this very talented person. And we sort of like made her, or like media made her into this sort of like whitewashed person that we wanted her to be. And she wasn't like that at all. And she was very troubled. And I was like getting beclamped, like just talking about it. Mm-hmm. And my son is like, Mom, are you okay? But I think that we feel like we know these people because maybe the music resonates with us. Mm-hmm. Always loved Prince. I wouldn't consider him like deep, deep into the vault. So I'm sure there's some readers who, you know, could challenge me and I would lose. I loved him. His death was A, such a shock. And B, he just represented everything that the character in this Ramona missed about her current situation. So just playfulness, mischief, sexuality, surprise, sparkles, purple. Ridiculous clothing, purple. Of choosing, and actually I never thought of, like, we could have a whole other series with other dead celebrities, but there wasn't anybody else in the room. He's just so unique and means a lot to different people.
I agree. I mean, I remember heard a Prince song. I was in carpool with my friend and her mom, and she was a huge Prince, and she played When the Doves Cry, and I was like, okay, like I'm in, and she liked him and Duran Duran, and so that's all she played in the car, and
so, still alive, still performing.
but I wasn't with her when Prince died, so I know her reaction was, you know,
probably very hard hit.
Yeah, probably a bad day. She probably took off, but no, I remember that moment and what kind of what Prince like meant reading this. That's all I could think about is just like, because Ramona's sitting in the car, like about Whitney Houston to your son explaining, well, this is the music video. This is how this happened. And I was, I know about that.
Oh, yeah. You must have like several music fan moms in your life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All, you know, I really don't trust. You know, if you're not a music fan, I don't really trust you. You're missing something.
I did have a woman up who was like, she was like, honestly, I don't, not a fan. I don't get it. But to her credit, like she had family and they didn't play like American music. So she's like kind of coming at all the references.
Well, yeah, your book's a good introduction.
Yeah. It's like, there's time, you know. Get on the Spotify, girl.
So I happen to be a huge Jim Cantore fan. And I was finally rewarded with a mention of, and I called.
You're like, where is he?
Yeah. Oh, I wrote a whole college essay. I watch where Jim Cantore the other direction. So
she called me legitimately upset about, like, she hadn't gotten to when he comes into the understand why this is a whole Hurricane book and he's not even in the book. And I was like, well, I'm not gonna ruin that moment for her.
And then I
he came to Savannah, but like not until like the thing was here.
Yeah, till the trouble was there. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, why was his arrival so delayed? Was it supposed to be like shrouded in mystery and then we get him?
Well, I don't think that I planned out. I mean, to be fair, like he did show up in sort of the mystery. But I don't know that Ramona had that much time to be checking her phone, to be hanging on.
Gotcha. I feel that.
Some people in Hurricane Country, they devote a lot of their lives to that.
I understand that. Jim Cantore and I have a very, very long history together. I just had to get that out there.
Can we get you like Windbreaker or something?
I wanted to buy the yellow ones because they now switch to blue, but they used to have yellow ones and they were made by L.L. Bean. And I found it on the L.L. Bean website and I was like, Mom, this is what the chief hurricane hunters wear. And it was like a $300 rain jacket. And she was like, absolutely not. You don't need that. Sure. And so I got like the $60 version for Christmas that year. And I have never been prouder. I love it as much as my Trading Spaces painting t-shirt.
Well, I like that because I feel like you pivoted and embraced it.
Yep. Okay. I have a problem. I know this. Jim Cantore is the man.
I can't stop laughing at you right now. I love you so much. It's so like, funny.
That's adorable. I don't get it. But so now, okay, so we evacuated for Matthew and Irma. But so we now I have a guy that I follow here. It's called Anki Research, and it would work for Charleston too. His name is Chuck. And I like cut through all the drama and paranoia, and I don't go on the Weather Channel. I just pay attention. And if he's like, get out, I do. And if he's like, don't worry about it, I stay.
Okay, I'm gonna get this guy because I do need him.
I will put that in the chat later.
Perfect. Oh, thanks. So to piggyback on that, do you have a funniest evacuation story?
Gosh. Well, ours went pretty, knock on wood, smoothly. I will say, I think it was Irma. This was before I had my best friend who I followed. We went to Western North Carolina, and so did the storm. And the only more terrifying than being in Savannah during hurricane was being like up high. So we were like in the mountains and the trees in unnatural sounds, and there are rocking chairs. I think my parents have little condos or chairs. And I, like my husband and I were just like the whole night just like holding on to each other. Kids slept through the whole time. But that was the hurricane that we evacuated and it followed.
Mm. You're like, come on, I tried really hard not to be there.
But Ramona's story, some composites and like inspired by like little stories and about how Adelaide wouldn't leave without her animals is a big factor for most people. And my friend Amy, who is a brilliant writer and read early drafts of this, part of that was inspired by her because she has some big dogs and she also has a big pig. So wow. They had to get out of Dodge and find a place that would take the pig, and they ended up at La Quinta. Ah. So if any of your followers have pigs, there you go.
At La Quinta takes pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I was wondering where the guinea pig came in. I was like, somebody she knows or she has a guinea pig.
Well, I had rodents as a child. It was a dynasty of hamsters. There was like Squirt and Scoopy and Edward Scissorhands, and they didn't last forever. And at some point, I think our neighbors get the kid a real pet. So then they have, as a grown-up, they have class pets and I don't think that we actually ever had any furry ones, but we did name Cinnamon for a whole summer. And I took him out, his pretty low maintenance. That's for a turtle. The receptionist, Miss Sapp, did say, I don't like turtles already. So I stole that and put it in the book.
That's great.
But I needed an animal that was a little more high maintenance.
Yeah,
because the turtle could have been fine in like the school during the hurricane.
Yeah. But the guinea pig would need some love.
Yeah.
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 I'm with that.
Interesting.
We're going to start getting a little heavier as forward. but your book had, I'll call it a political sprinkling in it. And the characters lean, the way you wrote, it wasn't something that would be an alienating to people that lean right. It felt, you know, this is their opinion. Take it, leave it. It's not in your face. But how do you kind of toe the line in this divided political climate that we live in? And do you feel like you have an obligation in your writing to kind of put your beliefs out there politically?
Oh, that is a good question. I don't think you should worry about it, because I think if you worry about making everybody happy, nothing happens. It was such a, well, at the time, we thought that was turbulent and that we didn't know
right, what was happening.
Held. But at the time, many women who believe in equal rights, hopeful that we would have our first female president. Mm-hmm. And it was a big surprise. Big surprise. So I am living in a spot that is a super conservative. I mean, we find in our neighborhood. All of that's really interesting to me. No, part of the reason I said it when I did was because Hurricane Matthew for Savannah was a couple before the election.
Okay.
So those of us like drove back in. When we came back to Savannah, we drove back in through this wasteland. A couple weeks of picking stuff up, no power. And stomped on by a giant. And then the election was surprise to some people, didn't go my way. So I was like just interested in that kind of period right before and right in the middle. And I don't know. I've had some readers who sort of look back at that and remember or feel a little tender still. Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, we up in New Orleans are on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And so, you know, we had Katrina and that whole time and then all of the politics that surround. And so there is, the two kind of really do go hand in hand in that they're hard to be separated and disaster and change. For some people, we call it disaster. You know, it's all wrapped in one, and it all kind of smacks you in the face at the same time. You know, whether you agree, disagree, whatever your, it all just kind of gets wrapped up in one.
And I'm sure there's readers who didn't vote the same way as me, and she just tell a story without saying anything, which is fine, but seems unrealistic,
right?
At that, like, very loaded time in history.
Yeah,
the record. I was cool with it.
Yeah, and I think that's something. There's even like I saw bits of myself in some of those conversations, because that's something that I think it's Ramona's husband that like makes a joke about, like, oh, he'll never get elected. Like, he's a reality TV star. That's ridiculous. And I was like, that is an exact quote out of my own mouth. That like I. Ridiculous. And I was like, I'm not even worried about it. Like, I'm not even like, yeah, that's kind of scary, but clearly everyone can see, like, this is an actual joke. Like, this is a joke, right? And I think for a lot of people, they like woke up that day, not a joke. This was definitely not a joke. I just think it's really interesting to see how that's peppered in very tasteful. So this is a very tasteful peppering of political leanings for it to not be a political book.
Yeah, that's why I called it a sprinkle, if you will.
It was a sprinkle. Also, well, in Ramona's case, I think that she is so busy that she's not allowing herself time to worry about it. But for me, and like maybe a big wake-up call, I think I was really naive as to what kind of stuff is out there, as to what's important to people and what they're okay with. Mm-hmm. So I know now.
And then kind of leading into a completely different direction, and I promise there's a point when I get there. In reading a different novel, the lead character is a painter. And if anyone follows our social, I'm obsessed right now with the Court of Thorns and Roses fantasy series. But the lead character is a painter. And after each lifetime, like big life-changing traumatic event, she doesn't feel the urge to paint, or doesn't, and the quote is, she doesn't see colors the same way that she did before. Similarly, Ramona expresses not feeling the need to express herself artistically. Why was that important to show her not desiring painting after the birth of her children?
I think she was just focusing on survival. I think that if this had happened 5 years later, Ramona would have started painting again. Mm-hmm. I think that she was dug so deeply into autopilot. Mm. And maybe that's not even a reliable statement. Maybe if she had picked up a paintbrush, she wouldn't have been so ragey at several other characters.
Well, and I was curious too. I was like, is she just lying to herself?
Maybe.
That like she doesn't want or feel the need to paint just to like make herself feel better. It's like, oh, I love doing that, and that was a huge part of my life, and maybe I'll go back to it, but I don't need it right now.
Yeah. I think she's just deep in survival mode.
Yeah,
interesting.
That kind of leads into like our next question, and kind of the loss of like the singular identity, like when you become a mother, and you know, it's we're potty training, not our child is potty training. We're potty training, and
we need a nap.
We need a nap. Yeah, and there's something like inherently female about just taking care of things, and they end up not only mothering their children, but their spouses, just everybody, just to kind of autopilot, keep everything afloat. And so why is it that like women are the ones that lose the I in the we, as opposed to male counterparts? Because obviously her husband did not lose the I in that.
You know, I think about this a lot. I just wonder, and I didn't get the background, if y'all are mamas. I think that there is something about sharing a bloodstream and a heartbeat that, you know, just instinctively you want these things for these little weirdo creatures. And you may have the most lovely, loving, super responsible, super thoughtful partner, but sometimes the instincts are not there. And I do think that there were actually parts where Ramona was more of a dick to Desmond, and some of those got cut, because I think part of their alienation was she was just doing it all. And at some point she kind of stopped trusting him. I think he is a decent dad. I think he sort of his intentions would not quite hit the target. But I mean, that's something I struggle with. I don't know if any of y'all or your listeners do.
Just like the do it all, like I need to do it all. Yes. I was joking. I was like, because I've had this conversation with other moms and just wives, domestic partners, like just people in general. And like, it's down to like, my significant other did all the dishes, but they loaded the dishwasher totally wrong.
And then you're like, well, do I do like a slow clap for the first part or do I correct that?
Yeah. And it's kind of like, I just like, I rearranged all of the dishes in the dishwasher because they weren't in there correctly.
you and I probably would not be the best roommates because my dishwashing loading style is kamikaze and my husband resents it.
Yeah. There's
like, he also like gets frustrated because when I put things back in the fridge, I put them in different places because I don't care. And he's like, if you took the half and half out and put it back 10 seconds later, why would you put it somewhere different? I'm like, I don't know.
Everything has a place and a place for everything.
Yeah. All right.
See, I don't feel that way about my refrigerator. I feel that way about like my hall closet, like my linen closet. That is where I have my issue. But the fridge, I'm like you. I'm like, the half and half can go anywhere. Just have a nice home. Be happy. Live your life.
Okay.
But I think that if Ramona had told Desmond that she was struggling and that she was hurting instead of compressing it and then lashing out in other places, not that the affair wouldn't have happened, but maybe they would have stayed more connected.
Yeah. Okay. So that actually leads very strongly into our next question, which we lean very hard into her relationship with her boss, but it also leans into a lot of her relationships in general, is that she just has this, she does not want to ask for help. She does not want to seem, and it's very much so that like the shame sometimes that comes with motherhood, that like we're not perfect and we can't do it all. And for some reason, we feel like we have to be like the most perfect mother, spouse, and worker and have it all together all the time. And yeah, like and no one has it together all the time. But for some reason, when you're a mother, that pressure is times like 100. Like, how dare you give your child peanut butter before the age of 2? Like, it's just those camps everyone puts themselves in, and you're a failure if you're not in one of the camps or something against one of them. The actual question.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, you can fire back and then I'll get to the actual question. No,
I didn't know if you were venting or oh, there's a question.
There is an actual question. So to her job, her boss isn't a prick because she frames him very much so. He just like doesn't understand. So there were needs and requirements of the job that he trusted her to fill. And she felt very overwhelmed, but she also refused to ask for help and was not open and honest about how difficult parenting is while working full time, which leads us to bring up this polarizing character in philosophy, Jordan Peterson. He contends that much of the reason that women don't get what they want is because they're less assertive about their needs than men, that they do not ask for what they want and need. What are your thoughts on this? And what can women do to change this narrative?
Well, I think that, well, I'll come back to this, but I sense sort of a sea change in some of this in terms of women opening up or being more vulnerable about how, like, this is fucking hard.
Yeah.
So when I was coming up in the workplace, and I think y'all seem a good deal younger, I don't know, or maybe it's the filter, but we were coached, don't talk about your kids. You know, when you're interviewing, you want to make it seem like the kids, nothing is going to get in the way of you being the best person ever, best person for the job. which seemed, I remember interviewing, seemed totally unnatural because it was like, well, but also they want you to be yourself and show your personality. And these weirdo creatures that I pushed out of my vagina are like my heart. So I'm not going to have an interview and pretend like I care about, you know, social media more than my children.
Yeah. But
that is how, that was the philosophy at the time when I was interviewing and working full time. When you have something for your kid, call it an appointment. Don't say, I got to go over for my kid's lemonade stand. But I think that's changing. And I'd like to think that COVID helped, or some of the flexibility in remote work. Mm-hmm. Ideally, any work situation should support working parents because it's freaking hard. That should be men. That should be women. And yeah, maybe women, we should demand more flexibility.
Because, I mean, you even write it in the book. It's like, Ramona's like, I could do this from home. I could take the computer and do everything from home and pick up my kids and let them go play in the yard or whatever they want to do. And I can still get my work done. I can still do everything, but I can't be in two places at once. And, you know, then, but at the end of the book, when Ramona's like telling her boss, she's like, I can't do this anymore. This is hard. Like, I need support. Like, he was like, oh, okay, fine. Yeah, cool. And it's like, okay, but you've got to ask for that, Ramona. Like, it's one of those things that I think she was scared, to Lara's point, of like, you know, wanting to be perfect and being the only woman that was a mother in that workplace surrounded by a bunch of young people whose, you know, biggest problem is where they were going to go, like, have happy hour. She's like, no, that's not what this is about. And so, you know, I kind of have this like glimmer of hope at the end with Ramona that she's about to turn some stuff around for herself to make her life not easier, but more manageable for herself.
Because she does like her job and she cares about it and she wants to be awesome. But yeah, that is a theme. She is pushing things down all the time.
I hate that for her.
When I was writing Kenneth, I was imagining him played by, do you know who Michael Ian Black is? You guys are young. He was on The State in Wet Hot American Summer.
Okay.
Now
I know.
I'll send you a link to that in the chat. But it's funny because he must have a kid at SCAD or something, but he moved to Savannah and was at the book festival and had these posts about Savannah. And I was like, it's Kenneth.
You're here. Did you hear me calling?
You just appeared.
You did. That was all you.
Yeah.
Well, one of our favorite questions is, what's your go-to book? The one with notes in the margins, tattered pages, and what is your go-to beverage? And what are you sipping on now?
Okay. True story. I am not a rereader of many things. Mm-hmm. And that's also why I try to give books away to friends, because it's like, if it's just sitting on my shelf, nobody gets to jump into that world. And there is a book called Minor Characters, which is actually nonfiction, by Joyce Johnson. And she was a love interest of Jack Kerouac during the Beat Poets. And I went to a workshop, and then I read the book, and every word, because I like the ideas of the Beats and that generation and Ginsberg and Kerouac, because I am a wild bohemian hippie, but I don't like reading it. I don't want to read it. And a Minor Characters is sort of that era and this idea of freedom, all from the woman's perspective, which, as we know, is not the same. Mm-hmm. experience and back growing up in New York and going down to the village. And I just love that book. That's one of the few that I have read a couple of times and just really connected to her voice. What was the second question?
Your go-to beverage, and what are you sipping on now?
Okay, well, so in honor of today, it is a Malbec 220 El Origen Reserva. I really want to go to Argentina and go to a vineyard there and also hang out with Lionel Messi and his like sons and giant dogs.
Life goal.
Manifested Michael moving to Savannah. Manifest that, write it out.
Right? But I, when I'm writing, I drink gallons of coffee and sparkly water and I chew gum, Hubba Bubba.
Hubba Bubba, a vintage.
All right.
I love Hubba Bubba. You don't see it anymore.
Yeah. And it was like it disappeared during the COVID. I don't know what supply chain problem there was.
No, no.
But my mom, when I was growing up, my mom told me that if I chewed, when I was chewing in public, I looked like a cow. And that like scarred me for life. So I just chew in private when I'm writing, like.
It was an occupation to just occupy the mouth for a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like your sunflower seeds, but cleaner.
Is that your jam, sunflower seeds?
No, like baseball coaches and baseball players, they're always eating sunflower seeds and they'll eat the seed and then they just spit the seed out on the field or the shell out on the field. It's a little nasty, but yeah.
Cool. Okay, what was the third question?
Your drink of choice.
Yep. Your favorite alcoholic beverage you normally drink.
Oh, margaritas all day long.
On the rocks or frozen?
On the rocks. And so we do white tequila, triple sec, lime, and a little sparkly water. It's the theme here. And so sometimes I feel like when we go to restaurants and order, like we're used to ours having a little bubble in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like,
what? I love that. I'm going to have to try that because that sounds really refreshing.
As I am aging, the body is a little more sensitive to all the things. You guys have that to look forward to. So tequila is my liquor of choice.
Hey, that is, I feel that actually entering when I started like into my late 20s, early 30s, that was something that we kept joking about. I was like, oh no, it's happening, everyone. Like, you're like, it starts now.
Change the name of the podcast. Yeah. It's a thing.
All right.
What are you guys doing? What's your next book?
So the next books we're covering is The Dangerous Things by Stacey
Willingham.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It's like a it's a thriller. And it's another overworked, stressed out mom book, actually. Just hers is more thriller, whereas yours leans a little heavier into like social commentary and comedy. So it's very interesting to see kind of these placed next to each other.
It's also set in Savannah, so we have a little theme going.
Oh my gosh, we really do.
Yeah.
Is the author here?
She's from Charleston. And but it's set in Savannah.
I also want both of y'all to come to the Savannah Book Festival.
Okay.
It is February. It's always President's Day weekend. So sometimes people like go skiing or things. Do you guys ski? It's a lot of stuff.
I don't ski. I can't be trusted on my own two feet, let alone with things strapped to my feet and snow. Sounds me breaking myself.
How far is it to drive from Mississippi? Pretty far.
I would be flying.
Oh.
I would definitely be flying.
Home of, by the way, Eudora Welty.
Yes. They tie in. Song. Really?
Yeah. I always feel like when I'm going to like have a road trip and be able to like go see the Eudora Welty stuff, and it hasn't happened yet.
Well, we have the Mississippi Book Festival here in Jackson, and they tie in with like the Eudora Welty house and do like tours of her house and stuff.
Gosh, she's the coolest.
Very cool.
Okay, so I want you to come to the Savannah Book Festival. There's the headliners, but it's a bunch of dudes. Anyway, okay. But then there's one day, that's Saturday, and it's all free. And there's like 40 authors, and it's like fiction, nonfiction, historical fiction, memoir. And they're all in these like beautiful churches and the squares and the historic district. And you just like make a little plan and you hop around. Yes. And then you have a leisurely lunch with a day beverage. And then you spend way too much money on books from each year. And it's the best day ever. And
look like you promise.
And I'm spending, I'm at 12:45, so you guys could come or not if you're sick of me. And I think you should come. Also, I want to go, Georgiana, have you been to Y'all Fest?
No, I have not been to Y'all Fest. I moved here in COVID, and so they had shut it down, and then they just started it back up, but I worked for a hotel, and so I couldn't get off on the days that it was happening. Weird schedule, but I want to go so bad.
Because they bring a lot of cool, interesting people. And I will maybe next year and bring, he's 12 now, but he'd be 13 then.
Yeah. Well, and, if you do decide to go, shoot us a DM because we'll meet up and we'll go experience it together. Because
yeah, man. We'll do
that. Yeah.
I love Charleston. And it's only 2 hours.
It's not far at all. We go down to Bluffton and like the Beaufort area and Hilton Head probably more often than we get down to Savannah, but it's once you get to Hilton Head, you're essentially to Savannah. It's not that far from there. So same with Bluffton and Beaufort. So no.
Well, now that we all met each other, we are going to be besties and you guys can't get rid of me.
Yay!
You're welcome.
Well, thank you so much for your time talking to us about your book. Thank you so much for your book. And how can our listeners find you, support you? Where can they also join in on this
brigade?
Oh my gosh. So find me on the gram. It's just at Carolyn Prusa. I'm on the Twitters, again, just at Carolyn Prusa. I feel like I joined the Twitters later than everybody, so I didn't feel quite as invested when everybody was jumping ship or getting nervous about Elon.
We jumped ship, but mostly because we just didn't like Twitter as a platform. So,
well, I joined, I think, like pretty close to the book sale because it's a big deal in publishing. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of dialogue and shout outs and interesting articles, but I mainly just stalk my representatives and troll them.
That's perfect.
So Carolyn Prusa on the Twitters or the Instagram, and I am least laziest probably about Instagram. And all love right. to hear from readers and their favorite parts and their favorite print songs and where they were when they found out. And love talking to readers.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming on the show.
You are welcome. And I look forward to listening to it. And I will listen to all your other ones. And I like your book recommendations.
Well, thank you. We'll see you in February for the Savannah Book Festival.
You can bring some tomatoes to throw at me.
Never.
Fine. I'll
we'll bring you a nice bottle of champagne. How about that?
Hey. Even better.
There we
go. Okay, precious wonderfuls. I had a blast.
Yes, you too. Have a great Sunday.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye. Woo to the who, and we're back.
I like her. I like her a lot.
I like her a lot. She can stay. Yeah. She's such a fun person. And then I've also followed, if you don't follow her on Instagram, definitely do, at Carolyn Prusa. She's done a ton of book club events that also are cocktails. So all these different book clubs, like in her area, have made, and bookstores have made cocktails based on this book. So there's like an espresso martini. There's a raspberry beret that's like a champagne cocktail with raspberries in it. There's all sorts of really fun cocktails. So definitely follow her and check out some of her collabs that she's been doing with book clubs and bookstores in Savannah. Really, really fun. So thank you so much, Carolyn, for coming on the show. Thank you for once again answering the call of a stranger's DM.
Hey, you got a slide.
We got a slide. That is definitely going to be future merch with like the little Instagram DM message logo. Mm-hmm. And it just says, hey, you got a slide.
You got a slide.
Excuse me while I slide. But anyway, thank you for listening to Decanterbury Tales. Our book for February is
All of the Dangerous Things by Stacey Willingham. So happy to have her back. And I'm going to say it. I liked this one better than A Flicker in the Dark.
I liked this one better too. So
it was really good, y'all. I don't know if y'all read it.
To tell her.
I know it's only been out for like a whole 9 days. Because it came out on the 16th, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been out a whole 9 days.
Yep. I finished it in 3 days.
Yeah, that's about what I did. It is really good, guys.
It is really good. It's the first book I've ever annotated while reading. I made notes. I underlined things. I was being that book club girl. And I felt very proud of myself. But I think in this book, now that I'm a little bit more familiar with her writing style, was able to kind of dive in. So I hope you guys enjoy All the Dangerous Things by Stacey Willingham. And we do get to talk to her next month. So we will be fresh out of the Natchez Literary and Cinema Celebration when you hear from us again. So yeah, we will hopefully have seen some of you and all that. So thank you for listening to Canterbury Tales. Check out our website, decanterburytales.com.
And check us on socials. That's Facebook, Instagram. That is Decanterbury Pod. We also have a Goodreads that I need to update. But I did update our blog. So I am only a hair behind now. So if you're missing some notes and some things you wanted to look up, see some pics of us doing weird shit, check it out.
The blog has been 90% updated now. So whoop, woo. If you have a book recommendation, a wine recommendation, or a funny story you want to share, send us an email, decanterburypod@gmail.com.
Bottoms up.
Oh, stay weird.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.